Hello,
we have
this
that?
Is the Love Letters Squad. I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gallen, and we welcome you to Love Letters Live, where every week we bring you really a wonderful guest with a story to tell and a love letter to follow. And Teresa and I know, and you may all know this also, that within every life experience, every challenge, every victory that you don't know you can reach but you do, every unexpected blessing, every relationship, there are the seeds of a love letter waiting to be written way beyond romance. And it is such a beautiful thing to write it and stamp it and mail it and make somebody else's life richer with the love and gratitude you feel. You have no idea, maybe, how far-reaching and how deep those letters go. Every love letter changes a life in some way or other. And I want to go to our guest today, Sark, who is Susan Ariel Rainbow Kennedy. And really to introduce Sark is a complicated joy. Sark is most recently the author of Glad No Matter What. And it's an amazing book. It's all in handwriting, in brightly colored crayon, which seems to be how she lives her life and communicates, in primary colors, brightly and beautifully. And I guess rather than spend the whole 28 minutes talking about how much I love her, I'll just go to you. And let's have you talk about a little bit about why we have Planet Sark. And let's give us your website right away.
PlanetSark.com.
So worth visiting. PlanetSark.com. And it is an amazingly colorful, gratitude-filled world. We just love it. And this Glad No Matter What, by no means, this is a question I want you to talk about, by no means means you have to be glad about everything, because what are we, idiots? We can't be glad about difficult and tragic things that happen. So what does that mean, glad no matter what?
Well, it's transforming loss and change into gift and opportunity. And I like to say this is not a book about feeling glad when you don't.
Good.
How annoying.
Uh-huh.
All my life I've been called Pollyanna, and not in a good way.
Mm.
And so I wrote in the book the real story of Pollyanna. And there is a badge from 1913 that people can cut out and wear.
Okay, tell us a little bit about that.
Well,
the real story of Pollyanna.
Yeah, Pollyanna was a fictional character, Eleanor Porter, the book, and her parents died and she was sent to live in a town with relatives she didn't know, or they weren't very nice to her either. And she set about transforming the town by playing what she called the glad game.
Mm-hmm.
And this was another version of finding the silver lining. Now, I've taken that glad game and upgraded it a bit, where I'm encouraging people to think of something difficult or challenging in their lives,
mm-hmm.
and come up with something they feel glad about that particular difficulty or challenge.
Can you give us an example from your own personal
sure.
life so we'll know what we're...
Absolutely.
Your family or your...
Yeah. Well, I'll do it right now, something that's very present and current in my life, which is I feel sometimes overwhelmed by how much there is to do in my business,
mm-hmm.
and all the things that are being asked and required of me. And I am so glad that I have a business.
Yes, of course.
And I'm so glad to do this transformational work that I love. So what I'm really doing then is encouraging people to do what I call practical gladness. And so that puts them in what I call the marvelous messy middle, where they can practice with all of their feelings and find the glad parts in as many as they can and transform the other ones.
Can you, without asking you to do anything that would be uncomfortable, give us an example from your own life? I mean, we all have them.
Absolutely.
Where we just didn't know how something difficult happened to us, and then what do we do?
When I was 7 years old, my older brother was my best friend,
mm-hmm.
and he taught me how to find snapping turtles in the creek, and we did drawings together, and he was my everything,
mm-hmm.
and he was 4 years older. And then seemingly overnight, he turned into a monster.
Oh, my.
And he began sexually and physically abusing me. And that went
on. How old were you?
Seven.
Oh, when that happened.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that went on until I was 14.
Mm-hmm.
And it was immensely devastating. And I didn't know until years later that he had been abused by the next door neighbor.
Oh.
So he then in turn abused me. And
did you go to anybody with this?
Not, well, It's interesting. My mother, this was Minneapolis, Minnesota. My mother was actually pretty brave. She, with the family, started therapy, which was very rare at that time. My dad was a traveling salesman without much money.
So she was aware of what had happened?
No.
Oh.
In an incest family, it's always it's often an underground truth. Like it's known, but it isn't spoken. Something's wrong, and so the presenting issue was my children are fighting.
Ah,
and unfortunately, we got a therapist who allowed me to sit on his lap, and then asked me to wait outside while he spoke to my parents. And I heard through the door, I heard him say, "You have a very seductive little girl, and any problems in the family are because of her."
Oh my.
Now, who knows what he really said, but that's what I heard.
Mm-hmm.
And it was absolutely horrifying. And I carried that with me until, actually, I attempted suicide in my mid-30s.
Oh.
I started having flashbacks to the incest, and I hadn't eaten or slept in 2 weeks. And I just, you know, and luckily it was not a successful attempt, and I called the suicide prevention line. And the woman said, "Did you really want to die, or did you just want the pain to end?" And I said, "Oh, I just wanted the pain to end."
Oh, what an interesting difference, and what a good question.
Isn't it?
Yes.
And so I got into therapy, which continued for about 15 years and transformed my life. And so that transformation, those transformations and changes and the gifts and opportunities that came from those are part of why I was able to write my 16th book, Glad No Matter What. And I wrote about the abuse in my second book called Inspiration Sandwich, and I wrote a section called Transforming Negatives.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote about the gifts in the incest. Now,
Which were,
I moved into my imagination,
mm-hmm.
and I created a world other than the one I was living in. And I don't recommend this route for people. However, this is what I did. This is the alchemy and transformation that I was able to do, and I'm so grateful that I was able to do it. Now, I also have a wonderful childhood and had fabulous parents who loved me dearly.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a kid who came home in first grade and said, "Mom, show and tell should be me every day."
Oh, good for you.
And
you knew you had something to say?
Oh, absolutely. And she said, "No, honey, the other kids need a chance." And I said, "No, they don't." I said, "They're begging me to do it. They don't want to do it." So luckily, I had a really neat teacher who let me go to a different grade every day and do show and tell.
Oh, my goodness.
So
how
let me tell
smart.
You, yeah, when you're in first grade, this is my real speaker's training, because when you're in first grade and you've got to hold the attention of sixth graders, you've got to be really good.
What made you able to do it?
Soul and spirit speaking through me.
Do you remember what you said to them?
I remember.
Or anything about that?
Yeah, I remember. See, I've always seen and heard things more than other people, or more than other people at least admit to.
Mm-hmm.
And things are always being brought to me, given to me, shown to me. And so I was piled high with these things. And I'd be on my way to school and I'd find a gooseberry bush,
mm-hmm.
and then I'd crawl inside and make a fort, and then I'd find a piece of a book that someone left there and I'd concoct. I mean, I just had.
So you're luckily just extra conscious somehow.
Yeah, it's I have, and I practiced that, and I was practicing that then. So I just remember delighting them. I just remember standing in front of the class and just these delighted faces. Now, my other favorite job out of all the jobs I had, which were many, many, 250 to be exact.
What did you do? Give us a couple.
Well, I'll tell that in a minute,
okay.
But I had my first and best job was in kindergarten as the wake-up fairy. And so I was given the magic wand and was told to tap each child on the head to wake them up from their nap. There was this boy I didn't like, and when the teacher wasn't looking, I would bonk him on the head. But
privilege of power.
Yes. But I loved that job. I had a fabulous mentor who was my grandfather. I had many mentors. But this grandfather was so fantastic, and he told me, just when I was about 14, he said, "Do everything you can think of doing so you know what you don't want to do the rest of your life." And so I took it very much to heart, and I had 3 jobs that summer, and I went on to have 250 jobs, and I kept a small notebook, and if it lasted over 4 hours, I counted it as a job.
Oh, I was just going to ask you about that, because it seems that you were glad no matter what. I mean, that's so, even with this awful difficulty in your life, you could see around it and be glad about other things, but it seems that you took every responsibility so seriously that it counted as a job. I mean, that's a beautiful way to go about life. My job was the wake-up fairy. Your
yes.
resume must be just a kick to read.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I've got to pull out that little notebook and make, because I've never fully listed. I've talked about the different jobs in different books, but I've never fully listed them. You know, it's very funny.
So you've got about, well, many philosophies running at once. I mean, responsibility is apparently big, and your willingness to grab it.
Yes. And I would say joy and delight.
Yes.
I had a mother whose high value was fun. I mean, she had her, of course, shadow and dark material too, but her main thing was have fun. You know, you'd be leaving the house, have fun. And that was, it really, we carried that I carried that into my life.
Are your parents still living?
No, they both are happily dead. Mm-hmm. And I say that because I wish people would talk more about happy death.
Let's talk about it.
Well, I believe that all the dead people are, I don't know where they are, up or down or sideways, but I believe they're all gathered together looking at us and saying, oh dear, they're still sad about that. Don't they realize we're in a completely other dimension?
Yes.
And we're free. Uh-huh. You know, we're zipping around and we're just pure spirit, and we are not. It's just like when my cat died. I wrote about this in the book too.
I remember that.
Yeah, and he said, you know, we don't mind dying at all. Animals do not mind dying. We unzip our fur and we step out.
Yes, I've always been intrigued by that pure spirit and how nice that would be to be unencumbered by remembering a jacket and flossing and your cuticles and, oh, all the list of things to do to keep our bodies going.
Yes, it's true, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And death, I think so often, death is a terrible plan for the living.
It can be if we view it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I really do think that certainly there is grief that wants to cycle through us. And then I think, and this is the other thing about practical gladness from the book, we will feel and need to feel all the challenging feelings. We will just be invited not to spend so much time there.
Oh, not dwelling.
People get stuck.
Yes.
They dwell, and then they keep repeating the same story, and everybody says, I did it for years. Oh, incest. You know, incest is guaranteed for people to feel sorry for you.
Sure.
It really is.
Horrified or frightened,
please don't talk more about it. I mean, you know. And I really learned that there definitely is a time to retell a story. And then that time ends.
Oh, yes. How nice. I once read an article about somebody's personal tragedy, and it was actually a romantic one. And this was years ago, but it's still in here. And she had said to a friend, when will I be better? When will I know? She said, when you are as bored with this story as everybody else is, you'll know you're better.
Uh-huh. Yes. Fabulous. And we can
so many ways of looking at things like
right,
that.
And we can assist each other too. Mm-hmm. We can ask a friend, are you up for a positive challenge? Do you realize how often you've been repeating this?
Yes. I there was a postcard once by some brilliant company, and it said, it had a long roll of film, and it said, forgive or relive.
Yes.
Where do we put that? What does forgiving mean? You can't ever say that something was okay, because it wasn't.
No.
Where does the forgiving?
Well, I think the forgiving, I mean, I've forgiven my brother, I've forgiven my parents. Okay. I'm in process of forgiving that therapist. I will admit that I haven't fully gotten there. I've forgiven myself.
Mm-hmm.
But it all comes in spirals and layers.
Uh-huh.
So it's not a ladder. This is why I won't ever write a book that says 8 steps to feeling better.
Mm-hmm.
It's not we just march up the ladder and then suddenly we feel better. We, you know, this is when Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who was someone I knew, wonderful woman, and, you know, the stages of grief, great. You know, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
She never meant them to be linear.
Oh, good point. Thank you.
And you can feel angry 6 years after someone has died again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can come back around. It's on a different level.
Different level. I have a question for you. One of the many lovely things in your book, which I found so intriguing, was no feeling lasts forever.
Yes, because I think we're convinced it does. Oh, my goodness. People say, if I felt that, I would never stop. If I started to cry, I would never stop.
Oh, that is that fear, yeah.
I love you forever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't ever change.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's the worst
thing. That's a curse, isn't it?
I think it's a curse.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we might, you know, it's our opportunity to go against that.
But is it important to recognize, when you say that no feeling lasts forever doesn't mean that you are necessarily over it, that you can have the same experience in your head, but something about the feeling. The incident doesn't change, but the way you feel about it can change.
Absolutely.
Is that what you're...
Yes, and also that people can learn more about holding and having multiple feelings. Most of us, myself included, I was taught you could have one feeling at a time.
Oh.
And you had to go to your room to have it. And then you had to come out feeling better.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't really matter how you felt. It was basically like, squash that down.
Put on your happy face.
Yeah, and come out and join the family and, mm-hmm. and be a happy participant.
Mm-hmm. And don't demand anything from anybody else by your feeling negative.
No, and certainly don't admit that you have a panoply of feelings. I'm just amazed by people that they think, you know, happy and sad can coexist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was laughing at my father at the hospice standing in front of his dead body because my mother touched his foot and he moved and I thought he'd come alive.
Mm-hmm.
And I was laughing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were all laughing. And
so you have to allow yourself that. You have to allow yourself the laughter in the midst of devastation sometimes.
Yes, and in my suicide attempt there was humor, and
oh, yeah.
There really was, because I didn't know the pilot light had to be blown out in order to kill yourself. So I put my head in the oven and then just got really hot and smelled pizza.
I have a friend who attempted to end her life, and she had it all planned out, and this was in San Francisco, and days later she said, I could not find a parking space.
What, at the Golden Gate Bridge?
No, wherever she was, she couldn't get out of her car to do this. Thank God.
I know,
but it was a moment of just hilarious laughter.
Yeah,
and we have to know that we're entitled to do that, and it doesn't mean we're evil.
No,
yeah.
it means
or
we
crazy.
Are right. Mm-hmm. It means we are meant to hold and have and contain multiple feelings simultaneously.
That's such good news,
isn't it?
Yes,
and let's just say, we can learn and practice more about it so that we are really holding our own experience, so we're not trying to hand it off to someone else. And we all know how that feels. Someone tells you this sort of terrible story and then says, here, take this.
Uh-huh.
And you're like, actually, I'd rather you did the work. And that's the transformational work that I talk about in this
okay.
book.
And so Planet Sark, tell us how that evolved, just if you can, briefly.
Oh, sure. Well, I...
And when's the next train?
What do you mean?
To get there.
You're already on it.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah. I actually started my business in the 90s and called it Camp Sark because I didn't have very good experiences at camp. So
uh-huh.
I decided to make my own camp. And, of course, I didn't know that I was going to be one of the worst bosses I'd ever had. And the camp, I was going to have worse experiences at my own camp than I did at others. But that was, you know, another story. And when I transformed my business in 2000, I had been had 250 products made. I was a $2.5 million company. I had a staff of six. And it was way too fast. It was too fast, too much. And I didn't know enough about business or management of myself, much less a business.
Mm-hmm.
And so I dismantled it and started over. Also, my mother started dying at that point,
oh,
and really
yeah.
I decided to care for her and spend time with her in those last years. So I decided that it was time to transform Camp Sark into Planet Sark. I decided
uh-huh.
it was larger than a camp
yes.
now, and it was, in fact, a planet. And so that's how that became that name. I don't know if it's going to be Universe next, but you never know.
Gosh, well, it's because evidently you just have so much to offer what people need to hear.
I feel very called. I really write and create for the collective consciousness. And I have an inspiration phone line. I've had it for 16 years now. And people call from all over the world, about 12,000 people a month.
I can see why.
And I, you know, read a poem and sing and talk about my life. And then people leave me equally moving messages. I mean,
mm-hmm.
And from those messages, I get a very heartfelt sense of what people are wanting and needing to
mm-hmm.
hear. And I create it.
So I have in my hand something you handed me as you walked in here today, and it's a book of love. And this is from children.
This is from a group of sisters who came to my event
uh-huh.
recently.
Okay. What I want to, if I could just read this.
Oh,
because
yeah.
we are about love letters, and I'm looking
how old
at,
were these sisters?
9 to 15, I think.
It's all colorful, and oh, I wish it were TV. Sometimes I really need to have this on TV. But anyway, so this is a collection of notes to you, and I'm stunned that – I'm not stunned. I know that people have this in them. So this young girl says, I really – to Sark with a little heart after it. And you allow people to do this basic kind of childish icons.
Childlike.
You know, childlike, thank you. And not to have absolutely no pretension. And when the pretension is, the need for pretension is taken away, which Teresa and I encourage in love letters, you get something wonderful here. I really admire your worldview and basically how you live your life. You seem like such a fun, exciting person. I love your handwriting, too. You are incredibly insightful, and I admire how open you strive to be. I have a tendency of being much too serious for my own good, and if I could be more spontaneous, I think I'd appreciate life more. Lots of love. Your fan, Eden. And what makes this a perfect love letter, Teresa, yes, it's all about the other guy. This is a letter to you telling you how wonderful you are and what you bring to her.
Even the part where she said, and I'm like this, it's
right.
In relation to Sartre.
That's right. So you can talk about yourself in a love letter if it's in relation to what somebody else brings you. This is just filled. But here's another one that makes another wonderful love letters point. I'm terribly sorry this letter is not as thought out as I would have liked. But I'm in the car right now, and thoughts are rushing rapidly into my head. One of the things about a really wonderful love letter is to take the luxury to think it out. But given that she hasn't, she says, in a nutshell, my friends and I all had pretty rough freshman years. We're 15, and we discovered your books, and they helped us not to take everything so seriously. I think you are one tremendous person, and I'm glad to have had your influence in my life. And how lucky that this 15-year-old has you in her life. She says, I had a pretty rough freshman year. That's a difficult time of life, and there's a lot of talk now about bullying and cruelty. I don't know what happened in the last 2,000 years that people were seem to be unaware of it, but so wonderful that you are allowing people to see the joy in even difficult surroundings. Joy in the situation, but the joy in...
Well, even the joy in the situation. I mean, you know, I think we really can transform and have a different view and move from moment to moment and find our joys in those moments. People are like, oh, find joy for a day. No, that's too long. Find joy for a moment.
Oh, as an expectation, that's not fair, you're saying.
It's pressure. It's like, you know, we're supposed to be this and that and glad and, you know, conscious and all the things, you know. And it's really so much tinier. I'm always encouraging everyone to do everything tinier.
Good.
No, yeah. I have this idea that if yoga would open up to my idea, we would have twice as many people doing yoga. And it's very simple. It's called tiny yoga. And you go in and you practice for 5 minutes. And if that's enough, you stand up and say, tiny yoga, good night. And you leave. And it would just give you enough of a taste. Don't you love that?
Well, it actually gives you, it also gives you constant success.
Yes.
Or the possibility of it. You haven't flopped at something.
Yes. And
so
maybe
important.
you're inspired to do more.
Yes. If you were to write a love letter right now to somebody in your life, and you probably have so many of them, who would it be?
Well, I'm really tempted. I feel like I want to write a letter to a wonderful man who was one of my primary mentors named Mr. Boggs.
And who is that?
Mr. Boggs was 80 years old when I met him, and I was 10. So I had been abused for 3 years at that point, and I was desperate. I had made a little spot in the apple tree in the backyard where I could hide. But I really, I think, wanted another person to witness me and to love me besides my parents. And so this man in the neighborhood was named Mr. Boggs, and he was 80 years old. And he called me his twirly friend because I used to do wheelies in his driveway. And then he wanted to teach me to look close and to look far. So he bought me a microscope and a telescope.
Oh.
And I felt so safe and loved at his house. So I went there every day. And then he got really sick. And he went in the hospital, and my mom said, Mr. Boggs is probably not going to come back. She said, you know, he's old. He's 80 years old. He has a lot of health conditions, and you need to be prepared. And I said, well, what I need to do is create something for him every day he's in there. And so I did that. And he did get out. And he said, I think you saved my life. He said, no one else called or wrote while I was in there.
You wrote to him, and when you say you did something for him.
I created like a miniature book and a card and a drawing and every day. I think it was over a month. And he said, I think you saved my life. No one else called or wrote while I was in there. He said, and I had to get out to see you. And I ran in the house and said, Mom, I'm supposed to be a beacon of hope and write books for the world. And then she said, eat your peanut butter sandwich. But I wrote my first book that summer of my 10th year and then was not published until I was 35.
And that was the book to Mr. Boggs?
It was actually a book. It was called Mice from Mars, and it was a thinly disguised abuse story. It was about a mouse coming to Earth from Mars and then not understanding what garbage trucks were or streets or, you know, so the mouse was constantly running about to be crushed by something. Mm-hmm. And I'm always happy to say that the art in it was not is not very different than the art I do today.
Does Mr. Boggs have a family?
You know, I thought of that. I've never looked at, I've never tried to find out. I think he didn't have a family.
You know, in the world of love letters from where we sit, I think Teresa would agree with us. It's so worth writing and sending it to yourself, or just writing and addressing it to the family of, and let it sit in your bedroom or your living room or somewhere for as long as it takes for somebody to emerge. Maybe the fact that you're thinking about him right now means that.
Yeah, and I just think even to his spirit, I mean, he has been such an avatar, such a mentor, such a, he has joined me on this entire journey of my life, really.
And wouldn't it be nice for his family to know how far his reach has been?
Yeah.
If anybody could be found.
Yeah.
Or just the world.
Yeah.
Well, that too.
Just how to be a mentor.
Oh, yes. And we all have them, and we're surrounded by them, and we ourselves are them.
Yes.
And I like to say that I'm one of the many wonderful, what I call paper mentors.
Mm-hmm.
So people who mentor through the pages of their books.
Well, I was so touched by your book, and I saw it, and I didn't know what to expect, and I saw all the crayon, and you know, you wonder what is there. And for some reason, it was so compelling to read what you, every word, and somehow your method just draws people into safety.
Let's say the title of it again and where to find it.
Yes.
Yeah, Glad No Matter What, Transforming mm-hmm. Loss and Change into Gift and Opportunity. And it can be found everywhere, and you can go on planetsark.com and order in all those wonderful online ways.
So but worth seeing it. Just to have the joy of this cover sitting in your house is kind of a treat.
It is, isn't it? It's me in the center of a labyrinth out at Land's End. And I recommend this labyrinth, by the way.
Okay.
It's a fabulous little hike out to it. And, you know, I happen to feel and have seen that color in some ways was taken away from adults.
Yes.
And I'm here to bring it back.
And pictures, yes. Good for you. Oh, you brought so much. Thank you so much for coming to do this with us.
Thanks. I loved it. I love you both, and I thank love you. What you're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Love what you're doing.
And we love our listeners, and we invite you to join us every week at this time, right here, same time, same station. And in the meantime, and always, please put your loving thoughts into words and send them while you still have the chance.
Yes. And please remember that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, that writing a love letter is a special occasion and a chance for you to put your best self on paper.
Right. So, till next time, this is Teresa.
And Janet saying
bye.